I'm sure there's a few of you that may not know who I am, so I'll introduce myself. I'm Dwayne Moore, and I've had the privilege of being a part of this church family for a good while now. It's coming up on 6 years. It's hard to believe we've been in Frisco for that long, but I have the privilege of being able to kind of serve as a lay volunteer staff guy and get to fill in every once in a while, and it's a lot of fun when I get the opportunity. At least it is for me. I hope it is for you, but sometimes it may not be. I don't know. But we're gonna look forward to continuing a series that Pastor Tim started last week, and I want to thank him for giving me the opportunity to be able to stand before you today. And last week he started a series called Shift. Okay. And talked a lot about Moses and how he had several monumental shifts in his life. And as he was talking about that last week, it took me back to a time not too long ago in my own life, literally about 2 to 3 weeks ago, where I was actually coming to church. And when I was, I park over in another parking lot over there, and when I walk across for the first few years I did that, I just walked across the sidewalk like a normal person would. But then I thought, there's a shortcut here. And realized there was a little fence and a little grass pathway that I could walk across. So I started taking that. But what you have to realize is next to this grass pathway, there's a retaining wall that's built of stone right next to it. And on the other side of that retaining wall is about a 6-foot drop on the deepest part. Well, what do men typically do when you see a nice, long, basically balance beam standing in front of you? Well, no, you don't jump. You walk the balance beam because I consider myself to be a nimble, athletic kind of guy. I'm sure you would agree, right? Yeah, of course. Sometimes not so much, as you're about to find out. But I had walked that many, many times, and this particular week, sometimes I'd walk on the wall, sometimes I would just simply walk on the grass. This week I'm talking about, I happened to step through the gate, went to shut the gate, and it didn't latch. So I turned back around, latched the gate, and when I took a step, I thought I was stepping on sure footing, sure ground, grass. I happened to clip a stone. And that stone, guess what it did? Shifted. And when that stone shifted, guess what Dwayne did? Dwayne took a big fall, a big fall. Not only did my knees hit that stone, apparently I must have kind of hit my head too, but I hit that, and then as soon as my knees hit it, all of a sudden I start the 6-foot fall. And it's kind of like that weird feeling. You ever had that slow motion feeling? It's like, oh no, I fall. You just feel it happening, but you can't do anything about it, but yet it's happening so fast that you just can't react fast enough. And I found out the other thing about that is I'm 42 years old now, and I realized as a 42-year-old, I don't bounce like an 18-year-old. And I landed with a thud on that ground, and I literally laid there for a minute, and I was like, okay, I'm breathing. I'm alive. And then I rolled over on my back, and I could just feel my whole body going, oh. And I'm literally, I'm kind of rolling around on the ground there, and I'm like, okay, am I okay? Am I all right? And then I start to push myself up. I'm like, okay. Start dusting myself off. And what do men typically do when something like that happens? We look around to make sure nobody sees, and then we act like it didn't happen. So I walk in, and of course I'm kind of like trying to make sure that I don't limp too bad. No, nothing's wrong, you know. I walk through the door. And apparently, I'd shared with you earlier, apparently I'd hit my head. And, of course, I had dusted off. I thought, man, there is no evidence that anything happened. As long as I walk semi-straight, nobody will even know. I walk in, and somebody looked at me kind of funny. I just kind of waved at him and said, hey, good morning, how are you? Tried to act normal, play it off. And then my son comes up to me. My youngest son, my lovely youngest son, who always is willing to point out the most important things to me, comes up to me and says, what's wrong with your head? I said, my head? What are you talking about? He goes, you're bleeding. I was like, Oh, no. And I went in there and literally I had this gash across my head. I'd hit my head as I'd gone down. And so it's one of those deals where all of a sudden I realized that not only had I taken a fall, but it was open for all to see. And in that moment, I realized sometimes shift happens. It just happens. And the reality is sometimes we don't even see it coming. We have absolutely no idea. And this morning, I'm going to start with a video clip. Paul Giamatti, who is a seismologist and a teacher in San Andreas, the movie San Andreas, and he's answering a student's question. I want you to listen to the question, but also listen to Paul Giamatti's answer as he answers that question.
Professor, do you think something that intense could happen here?
Well, the San Andreas Fault runs right up the spine of California. It's the demarcation line between two tectonic plates that are constantly moving. And add to that the fact that it's supposed to happen every 150 years, and we're about 100 years overdue. I'd say it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when.
Wow, isn't that a powerful statement? Not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. And I think sometimes we live our lives thinking, if this happens or if this happens, and granted, a lot of the things that we're saying if about may never happen, okay? So this isn't about being a fatalist and saying all the bad things in the world are going to happen. But what I am going to guarantee you is this. At some point in your life, a huge shift will occur. A huge shift in your life will happen. And you are going to be forced with a decision to make. You're going to have the ball in your corner. And you're going to either choose the direction that says, I'm going to allow this to take and transform my life for the good, or I'm going to allow this and allow this thing to take me down a wormhole that I cannot crawl out of. And this morning, we're going to take a look at a guy by the name of Joseph. And we're going to see that his life didn't just have one or two, but he had several monumental shifts that took place. And with each shift, he had a choice to make. And this morning, what I want you to take away from this is that you're not going to outrun the shift. You can't do it. It's going to happen. And you say, well, does the shift come because I create it or because somebody else does? Yes. It's not either or, it's both and. And understand this, you are going to do something stupid. If you haven't already, which I have many times, okay? I can't even count how many times I've done something stupid, said something stupid, thought something stupid. And then all of a sudden, I'm in the middle of this shift that I cannot control. But I can also tell you about all the times where there have been many, many situations where things have been done to me, where people have made decisions, and guess what? Dwayne has to live with those consequences. You have to. You have to. And the issue is not whether or not it's coming. It's what you're going to do when it does. So this morning, we're going to kind of make the comparison of the earthquake analogy. Because really, in our lives, circumstances are like tectonic plates underneath the earth. They're constantly moving and shifting, constantly crashing and colliding with each other. That kind of describes our circumstances and our relationships, right? Even your best relationship, even the people that you consider those who are closest to you, you're going to be crashing and colliding with. You're not going to be able to avoid it. But at the end of the day, you do have a choice with where you will go with it. Romans chapter 8, verse 28 is the verse that we're going to use to kind of springboard. Paul, talking to a group of believers, he makes this statement. He says, and we know that those who love God, that for those who love God, all things work together for good, for those who are called according to his purpose. Now, a lot of times we use this, and this is kind of our patsy answer when somebody says, oh, God's going to work it all to the good. First of all, I want to point out, he's talking about for those that love God, it's going to work out. Just hold on. It'll be okay. But the second part is really, the last part of that is the most important, because those who are called according to his purpose, if you are his, you belong to him, and you are called for a reason. And it's all really about his plan and his purpose in our life. And the sooner that we allow that mentality to saturate our hearts and our minds, the faster we adapt to the shift. As we look at this, there's a priest that had another way of stating this back 300 years ago, Jean-Pierre de Caussade. He said, everything helps me to God. Everything helps me to God. And that's how we have to look at our life, whether it's a fall off of a wall, a broken relationship, or anything else that comes into our life. We have to look for how God is using that to weave into our life and to create a new masterpiece message. As we look at Joseph's life, we see four key areas. We see abandonment. We see enslavement. We see entrapment. We see imprisonment. And we're going to look at those four areas, but we're going to kind of look at them through a different lens. And we're going to see how God used those things to completely transform where Joseph was at. And the first thing that we're in comparing this to kind of an earthquake, God sends tremors into our life or allows tremors to come into our life. Those are those shifts, right? And those tremors come in sometimes expected and unexpected ways. As we look at Joseph's story, it starts in Genesis chapter 37, and it spans all the way to Genesis chapter 50. I'm not going to read all that. Whew. All right? We would have been done after reading, right? But I am going to kind of surmise some of the story. I want to kind of give you a context of what's happening in each chapter. Chapter 37 of Genesis, we're introduced to Joseph. He's the youngest of 11 brothers. He's got a sister as well. And he is the prized son of his father. He is the apple of his father's eye. So much so that there was like this obvious, I mean, not just kind of, there was like this obvious turning to Joseph compared to the other brothers. And, you know, if you're Joseph, that's all well and good, right? Who wouldn't love being the prized child? But if you're the other brothers, how do you think that made them feel? A little bitter? A little jealous, huh? This whole story begins to unfold, and the way it was kind of revealed, basically, Jacob gave Joseph what it was called a coat of many colors. It was a coat of distinction during that time period. It was actually kind of a coat of royalty instead of just a normal coat that the rest of the boys had. That was Jacob's way of setting Joseph apart. Joseph didn't just allow that to be good enough, though. You see, Joseph also was a pretty special guy in the sense that God had his hand on him from the very beginning. Joseph started getting dreams from God. There were two in particular that are mentioned in chapter 37, and both of them had reference to his brothers and his father and mother bowing before him. Now, knowing if you thought that your siblings were jealous of you already, how do you think you would handle that? Well, if you're mature, you would say, let's not stoke that fire anymore. But if you're not mature, if you're not thoughtful, if you don't have an emotional awareness and understand your surroundings around you, guess what you're going to do? You're going to go share the story. God gave it to you, right? You might as well tell it all. So he goes to his brothers and says, hey, guys, guess what? I had this dream, and it had you guys bowing to me. Yeah, right? Imagine how they responded. They're like, who is this little punk? Of course, I'm kind of putting my own spin on that. So, you know, I understand that's not in the Bible. The word punk is not actually there. But the reality is they are looking at him and they're saying, dude, who are you? We are not going to bow to you. He even took the story to his own father, and his father said, are you bringing a story to me and tell me that I'm bowing to you? That's completely out of line. Now, was Joseph wrong? No. But did Joseph have a little problem with pride? Yeah, probably so. And that leads us to our first trouble area, first tremor, is broken attitudes. Sometimes, folks, our own attitudes get in the way, and I know I swing from one pendulum to another half the time. Think about this. How many times do we swing to this pendulum side of saying, I am the smartest guy or smartest girl in the room? There isn't anybody that's got what I got right now. I got this thing under control. I've got it going on. Just leave me alone and I will take care of it. Quit badgering me. Quit micromanaging me. I've got this. Right? I've been there. But then my pendulum swings to this other side, to where we saw Moses last week. When God is telling him, you can do this. I am going to empower you. I'm going to make this happen through you. And Moses said, No, I don't think so, God. Do you know what both ends of the spectrum are saying? God, you don't enter into the equation. God, you don't belong in the middle of this. And in either situation that you place yourself in, attitude-wise, completely disallows God to have a place in that play, in that circumstance. Broken attitudes will lead to seismic shifts in your life. And others' broken attitudes towards you will do the same. That moves us into a second area, because as we look at the story continuing in chapter 37, Jacob sent Joseph out to go check on his brothers. And as he checked on his brothers, he was supposed to see how they were doing, see if there was anything they needed. And they actually weren't where they were supposed to be, so he had to go another chunk of distance, and it's believed they were anywhere from 40 to 60 miles away from home. And as he started coming up on his brothers saw him from a distance. What do you think they said? Oh, there's Joseph. Let's go give him a hug. No, their fury had gotten to such a point that they were literally plotting a way to kill him. Talk about getting out of control. Can I just back up for a minute? Can I remind you of something? Do you realize the family that we're talking about here is the first family of the Bible? Not the very first, but what we would call the first family, the royalty of the Bible. This is Jacob, who was literally named Israel in his name change. Anybody recognize that name, Israel? Now the nation Israel? There were 12 tribes established out of Israel. Guess what their names were? All these boys. Israel is literally made up of this family. And we sometimes spiritualize, oh, Israel, the great nation of God. And they are. However, they were as dysfunctional as the Kardashians. And I say that to help you understand, nothing's changed, folks. There is a dysfunction that is deep within each one of us. So not only do broken attitudes prevail here, but as we watch these brothers plan to kill their brother, there was actually one brother that had a great idea. He said, hey, let's not kill him. Let's maybe just throw him in a pit and we'll figure out something to do, but maybe killing him's a bad idea. Thank goodness for Reuben, right? At least somebody had a clarity. But you know what? There's a problem here. When your best brother says, let's throw him into a pit, you've got a family problem. And when you, as the youngest brother, become the blue light special of the family reunion, you've got an even bigger problem. Because what ended up happening is they bartered with a group of traders and they sold him into slavery. What do we see out of all this? Broken relationships. So not only have we seen broken attitudes, but now broken relationships creating seismic shifts within the foundation of our lives. People and what they do to us. And imagine Joseph at this point looking up from the bottom of a dry well, crying out, fearful. Can't even imagine, even though he probably recognized his brothers didn't necessarily care for him, how in the world could they think about killing him or even consider selling him? But it's happening. You ever had a family situation that you just couldn't get past? You ever had a relationship that you just couldn't outrun? And the consequences keep coming back, and they keep setting in, and they keep taking root, and they keep bringing those consequences over and over again. It seems like the rumbles of the earthquake that shift has occurred, or that has created, continues to come back. As we move further into Joseph's story in chapter 39 of Genesis, what we find is that now he has been enslaved. He was not only sold, but he's been enslaved. He gets bought by a guy by the name of Potiphar. Potiphar is the lead of the guard for Pharaoh. And Potiphar buys Joseph, and he puts him in charge of a few things. And we're told something about Joseph, that God's hand was on him, that God was with him through the process. Tells us a little something about Joseph. Did he completely understand all that just happened to him? Probably not. But there was something that he didn't let go of, something we'll talk about a little bit later. But he continued to hang on. And we're told that God's hand was on him. And so he began to work in Potiphar's house. And as he worked through that whole process with Potiphar, he began to gain new levels of responsibility and leadership. And before you knew it, he was leading the entire household of Potiphar. And things were going well. If it's a stock, it has rose like 100% year over year, okay? I mean, literally, his stock is so incredibly high now, and he is seen as such a valuable commodity. Potiphar doesn't even really have to do anything. Literally, this dude touches something that seems like it turns to gold. And as you look at what he does, he just continually, time over time, it seems to be one of these guys that just can do no wrong. And then Potiphar's wife takes notice. Now, we're told that Joseph was a good-looking dude. Bowed up, said he was handsome and well-built. Probably did a little bit of CrossFit in his day, you know. Worked out. Had it going on. I'm sure, you know, if you were to see his chest, he had that chiseled ab look, you know, something that we all look for, right? He's just that young stud. I mean, he's just that good-looking dude. But there was something really special about Joseph beyond all the exterior. Joseph had a heart to follow God. And she began this process of making overtures towards him, continued to press him, continued to want more of him. Until there came a day where she actually went after him, and he literally left, leaving his cloak behind, saying, I don't want any part of it, running out of the castle, running out of the palace that he was in. She screamed. Everybody came running, and she told the tale that he had tried to make overtures to her. After she told her husband, he literally took Joseph and placed him in jail. This third area is broken people. Broken people and broken reactions. You ever had someone like that in your life? Maybe you've even been that person. Where you've wanted somebody, or they've wanted somebody or something. Maybe it's not only, it may not be you, but it's something that you have that they want. And they come after it full force. And when you don't give it to them, they unleash the pits of hell upon you. They unleash their wrath. They try to do everything they can to make your life as miserable as it can be. It presents a problem, doesn't it? I've seen that before. Tried not to be that, but I will never say that I never have done that. I don't think I have. But I've seen it in my own life. I've seen it happen. And these are people that are never satisfied, because at the end of the day, these are the type of people that have gaping holes in their heart. They have missing spots in their soul, and they're trying to fill those empty spots with all of these substitutes and all of these counterfeits, not recognizing that it's God they need. But in the process of all that, when you are the one that says no, you become the object of their fury. Broken people. I've often said, whether you're talking about a church or family or a business, you know what the best quality of those things are? People. You know what the worst thing of those entities are? People. They can be the best yet the worst. Because guess what? We're all jacked up. We all bring a mess to the table. And when we bring our mess and it starts colliding with other people's mess, all of a sudden, we've got tremors happening in our lives. Last thing that I want you to notice is now Joseph is in jail. And the crazy thing about it again, it says God's hand was on him. He was with him. And he continues to do his thing. And he rises in stature in the jail. And he comes across these two guys who had been former workers that had been in the palace with the Pharaoh. And they were now in jail. These two guys come to him and there's two guys, two dreams. And actually there were two interpretations that Joseph gave. Out of those, there was actually one promise that was made. And basically each of these dreams were telling the outcome of where these guys would end up. One would die and one would live and one would be reinstated into his position. And the only thing that Joseph asked, he said, remember me. Tell me about the Pharaoh. Tell the Pharaoh about me when you get there. Help me get out of this situation that I'm in. He said, will do. You gotcha. Everything happened just as Joseph said. Everything happened. And the cupbearer was reinstated into his position. And guess what he did? He forgot. He broke his promise. You know how much longer Joseph sat in that jail? Unnecessarily, 2 more years. I don't know about you, but that's a pretty major shift. That's something that radically changes your life. You lost 2 years of your life because somebody broke a promise. I don't know how many times I get off of calls and I say, I can't get that 15 minutes back. Conference calls or whatever else it may be. Boy, I can't get that time back. Just lost that part of my life. He lost 2 years. Talk about a seismic shift in his alignment and in his life. How many times do we allow the broken promises of others in our own lives to completely take us out of the direction that God has for our lives? Just because somebody said they would do something and they didn't follow through doesn't mean that God's not in control. But yet we act as if he isn't. There is a commonality that you see in each of these four areas. Do you see the common word? Broken. And there is something that's pretty incredible about brokenness. So why in talking about shift are we talking about being broken or brokenness? Because brokenness is the fundamental foundation point for anything that is built in the hand of God. If you are unbroken, you are unusable to God. And you say, why is that? Because we, as natural human beings, in all of our dreams, we create lesser dreams. Maybe a better way to put it is we build our dreams in the shallow end of the pool where we can control it all. And God has far more for us. He wants to take us into the deep water where only he can control it and only he can make it happen. Only he can build things when we are above our head. But the only way for us To give up our lesser dreams is for him to crush us and to shatter those dreams and to break us to a point where all we can do is finally look up. What happens when you get to a point where you're so broken you can't do anything else? Generally, you're on your face. And generally, the only thing you can do is turn around and look up. My friend, that is called humility. And we are missing that in our culture. We are missing humility and that sense that there's so much, even when there is humility, it's a false humility oftentimes. And what God is looking for is someone who will recognize that on their own, there is nothing that they can do. But by God's hand and his grace, all things become possible. So, we've looked at these tremors that we're going to face. But there are some truths that we have to embrace if we're going to experience and achieve the destiny that God has for us. And it leads us to this place of brokenness. If brokenness is a necessity, then let's learn about it. First aspect, the first truth that we need to realize is brokenness is necessary. Just like we talked about a moment ago. Apart from brokenness, we are unusable. And God wants to get us, more than anything, wants to get us out of the shallow end of the pool and into the large abyss of his grace, where we can experience something far bigger than what we can achieve on our own. It takes us to a completely different point where we're forced to recognize that brokenness brings beauty. That doesn't sound like that should work together, right? Something's broken, it's generally not beautiful. But when it comes to our lives and God breaking us, there is something uniquely beautiful that comes out of that. Because when he allows our dreams to shatter, it allows for a new life and a new vision and a new dream to emerge out of the wreckage. Do you realize that you wear a veneer every day? Anybody worked with coffee tables that just have veneers and aren't solid wood? What happens if you get a deep scratch on that thing? All of a sudden, you see the particle board. What used to look like wood, all of a sudden you realize is nothing more than compressed particles, right? It's a veneer. It's giving the appearance of something that is not really there. And we put on veneers constantly, trying to hide what's really going on inside of us. And what God is interested in is not the outward appearance, but the internal reality. And he is ready to break through the veneer. He will crack and destroy your veneer so that something real can spring up through it. This time of year is a perfect, perfect example. I've been driving all over the place, and I see these beautiful white buds that have broken through the deadness of a dormant tree. As I was driving to church this morning, going along the parkway, I saw the purple buds up on the tollway. How beautiful. Life springing out of dormancy. Life springing out of what appears to be deadness. Brokenness is an absolute necessity to see beauty. Another thing. Brokenness creates tension. Do I have any parents in here? Now, when you tell your child no, has anybody ever experienced a little tension because of that? As they grow, it changes, but it's all tension, right? When they're little, it's the kind of tension where they're going to scream and yell, and you discipline. As they get older, it becomes much more quiet and sullen and but there's a tension. when God doesn't give you what you want? What does that do for you? When you beg and you plead and you ask and you cry out to him and he doesn't answer your prayer the way you hoped, or he doesn't do for you the way you think he should. A little tension. All of a sudden, when you need him most, he seems silent. God, are you even there? Do you even care? He says nothing. Tension. And what begins to happen through that whole process is God is taking us through this development, this process in ourselves, where he is forcing us to identify what it is that's really motivating what we want. And there comes a point in time where we start wanting finally what God wants for us. But many times he has to use this brokenness to bring us to a point of desperation so that we finally want the better things. You see, brokenness will create tension so that we can actually learn who God is. Up until this point, and when God just continually just answers prayers the way we want it, he just is like a blessing control. He's a big Santa in the sky, right? But all of a sudden, when God says no, or he goes silent, all of a sudden, God becomes a little bit more dangerous to us. Because God is not who we perceived him to be. But make no mistake about it, God is who he said he is. Even though we may have a wrong understanding, God is exactly who he said he was. And he will use that brokenness and the tension that comes out of it to help you understand just who he is. As we're finishing up, I'm going to ask our band to come on out. A couple of more areas. Brokenness deepens our capacity. Do you realize that on your own, where you're at, you will not challenge yourself to move on? Just case in point. If your child only eats sweets, they will never develop a palate for vegetables or meat. If a student never takes the opportunity to read literature that comes from a guy like Shakespeare, or listens to anything classical, the only thing that they will allow to consume their minds are tabloid and all the sensational stuff that we see today. And the same thing happens to us when we settle for those predictable lesser dreams in our lives. We will never dream something more. So God allows the brokenness to develop a greater capacity to experience him, to know him, and to find the destiny that he has for us. Which ties in to the last thing. Brokenness generates hope. It generates hope and joy. The past is irreparable, but the future is always available. And in every case, we have the opportunity to grab hold of something new. Something fresh. And that's exactly what God is trying to do in each of our lives. He is trying to get us to release the lesser things. Let go of the junk and grab hold of what I am putting in front of you. Grab hold of the vision, because there is something so unique and special that I have for you. But you gotta let go of the lesser things. Let me have it. Genesis 50, verse 20. Tim, if you put that up there. This is Joseph's last statement to his brother. And I love this. As for you, you meant evil against me. But God meant it for good, to bring it about that many people should be kept alive as they are today. You meant evil. God meant good. One thing Did you look at that word mint? It comes from a Hebrew word that means to weave or to plait. And what he said, what he's saying there, he's saying, you wove all kinds of evil for me. You created a tapestry of evil against me. But guess what? God rewove it for good. God will take everything that's been woven against you. He will take those broken threads, those dark threads, those ugly threads, and weave into them all of the multicolored of grace threads that he has to provide. And he will make a masterpiece. That's why he can say in Ephesians chapter 2, we are his workmanship. We are his masterpiece. He is weaving that in you. But you have to let him. I'm asking you today, whatever it is that's held you back, whatever broken things, broken people, broken situations there are, I'm asking you. Would you stand as we sing this morning? And my challenge to you as we reflect on what God is doing and what he can do is to let Jesus come wherever you are, meet you in that place, and take you